The other thing I wanted to mention, too, is the Farm Bill, which, of course, is getting closer to the finish line. It began back in 2012, and we've been working closely throughout that process from the first bill that we passed in 2012 to the one that the Senate passed last year. And as a member of the Senate Ag Committee, I've been actively engaged in trying to make improvements to the final Farm Bill, including the disaster title, the conservation title, the commodity title, and the forestry title. So we've had a lot of involvement with this bill. Many of the policies that are included in it are things that we were able to get incorporated into the bill, but there are still some serious concerns that I have about aspects of it, particularly the lack of reform in the commodity title of the bill. I think that's a real missed opportunity. And right now it looks like what's holding it up may be the dairy title. I think that's going to be the probably biggest obstacle to reaching a final agreement. But I hope that that can happen. And, you know, whether it's something I'm able to support in the end or not, that we will get a bill on the floor of the House and the Senate sometime soon and at least get some certainty for our farmers and ranchers out there who are already starting to look at making decisions for the 2014 crop year. And in more immediately even than that is to get assistance to those who lost livestock during the devastating storm that we had back in October. Those are things, obviously, that that we need to why we need to get a bill through the process as quickly as possible.
Regarding the Farm Bill, what are there provisions that would kill the bill for you in the Farm Bill? What would cause you to not vote for it? Are there any of those issues that you're concerned about?
You know, I would say probably the biggest one. The reason I voted against it when it came out of the Senate Ag Committee is it just lacked essential reforms in the commodity title of the bill. And frankly, it's gotten worse. The commodity title has gotten worse as it's moved through the process. And by that, I mean it relies on high fixed target prices set in statute by Congress, and which is very far afield from the market-oriented reforms that I had hoped would be included in the commodity title of the bill. We need to be looking at the future of agriculture, not the past. And this really, using high fixed target prices that Congress puts in place in law, takes us back to farm policy that we saw way back in the 1980s. And I had really hoped that this farm bill was going to be focused on reforms. And we tried to offer some of those, have those included in the Senate version of the bill. But they've kind of gone back to the old framework, and in my view, that's really unfortunate. So lack of essential reforms in the commodity title of the bill will be something I'll be paying close attention to. Obviously, the conservation title, that they get the sod saver provisions made nationwide, that they don't carve out, you know, regional exemptions from that. Good, strong forestry title, which we've been very involved with, and then, of course, the disaster title, which Senator Baucus and I got into the 2008 Farm Bill. It has expired, and the reason that we need to get this Farm Bill done is to get that program reauthorized. The Livestock Indemnity Program is the one that would provide direct assistance to the livestock producers in western South Dakota who were so hard hit by the October storm. So, you know, those there are some things in here that are good that we've been very involved with and in trying to get included in the bill. But, you know, fundamentally, farm bills tend to be largely about the future of agriculture, the policies that are going to shape its future, and the commodity title of the bill really drives that. And in my view, this goes to an outdated, sort of antiquated structure and framework for the commodity title of the bill, which doesn't take into consideration the need for us to really take farm policy in a direction where our farmers are producing not for the government, not making decisions predicated upon policies that the government puts in place, but what the market would suggest. And those are the signals that we want to see our farmers following. And of course, that also saves a lot of money. When you use market-oriented reforms in a farm bill, you find significant level of savings. And I think we're going to see a bill come out of the conference committee that is significantly smaller in terms of the reforms, but also smaller in terms of the savings that we could have achieved for the American taxpayer.
A timeline for it?
I think it's, you know, it looks like possibly This could, if they could get this done, get it on the floor next week, that would be great, because the following week Congress is not in session. Then we get into the end of January and the State of the Union, a lot of other stuff going on. I would really like to see him wrap this up, at least the conference committee wrap this up this week, and then be able to put it on the floor of the House and the Senate next week. We'll see if that's an attainable timeline, but it seems, at least, if they can put to bed this dairy title, and there is a big conflict over the policy implications of the dairy title and the bill, if they can get that resolved, that I think it's realistic to think that we could get this on the bill by, or on the floor by next week.
Good. I want to see what your thoughts were. I know you're supportive, obviously, of ethanol and the ethanol industry, but what your thoughts were on the mood or the chances of seeing significant changes in the RFS this year as far as the will in Congress. Is there enough support?
Well, I can just kind of give you kind of my assessment of where we are on that. You know, as you know, in 2005 and 2007, we really worked hard to get these energy laws in place that would ensure a market for homegrown biofuels. And since then, we've tried, worked really hard to defend those laws from a lot of the attacks that are made, much of which are based upon inaccurate information. The record of the RFS is clear. Since 2007, we've seen the biofuels industry create thousands of jobs. We've seen our dependence on foreign oil drop from 60% to 40%. And in South Dakota, we now produce 1 billion gallons of ethanol every year. So I don't think that the RFS should be opened up legislatively. What the EPA will likely continue to do is to try and look at these targets every year, and they're going to have to use their flexibility to adjust the targets for cellulosic and advanced biofuel targets based on what's happening out there in the market. But, there is, I think, some flexibility there for the EPA. The bill that we passed in 2007 set targets for cellulosic ethanol that are not being reached, and EPA has lowered that target, for 2013, and we may not meet that target. But ultimately, the future of this industry really revolves around advanced biofuels, getting to that next level, getting to cellulosic ethanol. And I think that we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater and have now a situation where they go after corn-based ethanol, which is the platform to get to cellulosic ethanol. So we're watching it very carefully. We've met with, I think you probably all know this, but we met with the EPA here a couple of weeks ago, a number of us from ethanol-producing states, and it strikes me, at least, that we ought to be able to keep this industry moving forward, not undermine the progress that has been made, and still provide the flexibility that is necessary with regard to hitting the cellulosic ethanol targets in the future. And so I just hope that the EPA will work more with us, work with the industry in a way that we think is realistic and also grounded in a view, which I think is an important view, that this is an industry that's here to stay, and we ought to be looking at ways that we can continue to grow it. I hope that's the view that they adopt. And I think we'll get some relief from the meeting that we had, perhaps, with regard to the direction that they were headed for this year. But we're going to have to continue to work very closely with them and obviously with the industry to keep keep ethanol and its production moving forward.
So if I can follow, you seem to be optimistic that, at least if I could follow up on one of the last statements you made, I mean, that you might see some relief. What do you mean? Do you see them maybe not cutting things as significant as they proposed in November? What do you mean by that statement?
Well, I'm hoping that they will make a decision that gives back, doesn't completely reverse course, but at least moves us back to what we think is a more realistic volume level for this year. And I think that's, I think it's possible. I'm not saying it's likely, but I thought that it seemed to me, at least, that we gave them a lot of new information at that meeting and things that they perhaps hadn't considered. And I think that as they weigh that, that perhaps they'll come to a conclusion other than the one that they've reached already. And going back down to 13 billion gallons for an RFS, a volume level, I think is not helpful, and puts at risk a lot of the progress that we've made. Not going up above 14 billion may be too aggressive, but if there's somewhere in between that they could find that, I don't know where that is, and I'm not the expert on this, but as we made the case and made the arguments at the meeting a few weeks ago, I had hoped at least that we might see them come to a different conclusion that they had previously, and time will tell. So we're hopeful.
I have one more follow-up, but I'll let other people ask a question first.
Okay. Well, go ahead. You got it. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay. I guess the other question I want to – I mean, you know, you talked about the points of why, you know, ethanol is strong and what it means to the country and South Dakota specifically. But, you know, there's obviously legislation that's been proposed by Senators Coburn and Feinstein and other folks as well in the House. I mean, do you see any of these actually making any real progress? I mean, I know how you feel about ethanol.
Right.
But, I mean, do you see actually these things making some – progress?
Well, I think that the political equation and dynamic here in Washington has changed in the last few years, and a lot of that's been driven by sort of a complete reversal, if you will, in the environmental community. For a long time, ethanol, biofuels, was viewed very favorable among people in the environmental community, and then all of a sudden they decided to sort of pull out their support, and we started to lose support among a very key constituency, and that led to a loss of political support here in the Congress. I think the whole food versus fuel debate has cost us some support in the Congress. But, you know, that's why I've always said that the corn-based ethanol is the platform that gets us to cellulosic ethanol, but you don't get to cellulosic, you don't get to advanced biofuels unless you've got a very robust corn-based ethanol platform. And so there are a lot of folks who I think recognize that the future is in cellulosic ethanol, but are opposed for various reasons to corn-based ethanol production. But you can't have one without the other. And, you know, this whole thing about food versus fuel, you know, you look at the acres planted to corn today and compare it to, you know, 80 years ago. You look at corn prices today and what they were in 2007 when the new RFS was signed into law. A lot of these arguments, I think, are based upon bad information. So we're becoming much more efficient. We're getting bigger yields per bushel, more bushels per acre, bigger yields in terms of corn production in this country. Genetics are contributing significantly to that. And I think that this is an industry that's here to stay. And I know that the oil industry doesn't like that, but fact of the matter is it does reduce life cycle greenhouse gas emissions by 34% over gasoline. And cellulosic is going to be, when it gets fully, you know, when we get to that point, over 100% less than gasoline in terms of life cycle greenhouse gas emissions. So it is the right decision to make for those purposes. It obviously has, I think, bears heavily on the issue of energy independence and energy security, getting less of our fuel from foreign countries. And, of course, it has tremendous economic impact in places like the Midwest. So it's a win-win. And I hope that in the end, those who are introducing bills that would repeal it will not be successful. And we're going to have to work very hard to make our arguments. But I think in the end, we'll prevail.
Senator, if no one else is going to jump in, one more question again, Charles Ray. On conservation and the Farm Bill, are there enough provisions, do you think, to make sure that South Dakota maintains habitat for pheasants? There are those who say that the current version of the Farm Bill is leading to overplanting of several crops that's pushing that pheasant habitat out.
Well, I think there are some really good provisions in the Farm Bill that in the conservation title of the Farm Bill that will provide a good foundation for wildlife production as well as just good conservation values as well. And I mentioned earlier the sod saver language, which we got included in there needs to be, it needs to stay in there, but it needs to be applied on a nationwide basis. The last time this was done, there were all kinds of waivers that were put in place, and you know, that an opt-out was included for states, and it just applied to certain regions of the country, and it just doesn't work that way. So the sod saver language in the bill, I think, will be very good for the ultimate goal, which is to make sure that we have good policies in place to promote conservation, but also very good in terms of the contribution that makes toward wildlife production, and especially pheasants. And then I think linking conservation compliance to crop insurance premium assistance is also something that will be a really good policy in the long run. You know, our farmers and our ranchers are the best stewards of the land, but we do need to have common sense policies that ensure sound conservation practices are going to continue to be implemented. And so I'm hopeful at least that those two provisions, which are currently, or at least we're in the, it's hard to know exactly what's in the bill because they're playing it very close to the vest, but we're trying to determine whether or not those provisions are in the final conservation title of the bill. But those are things that we work to have included, and things that I think will be very important to the issue of pheasant populations and wildlife production in South Dakota.